When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code program.
On your mobile, on your wavelength, Talk Radio and Talk TV.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk TV. It is a Wednesday morning and in fact it's Prime Minister's questions coming up a little bit later on today. The day, I suspect, however, is going to be dominated by one story and one story alone today, and that will be the decision that is going to be made imminently in the Supreme Court about Shemima Begum. Shemima Begum, of course, is the woman who left this country, left these shores at the age of 15 to go and join ISIS. She became an ISIS bride. You know the story. We will retread it for you later on. She came from a Bangladeshi family who moved to this country before she was born. She was born in this country. Some people believe that makes her a British citizen. The decision that will be made this morning will decide whether or not she has the right to come back to this country, whether she has the right to be a British citizen, despite the fact that it was stripped from her by the Home Secretary of the time some years ago. This is an appeal process that she's going through. We will bring you that decision as soon as we have it. We understand it is underway very, very shortly, if not already. There will be a judgment, there will be a ruling made, and we will tell you whether she's going to be allowed to come back. My personal belief is I don't think she should. Other people disagree with me. Other people believe, as Julie Hartley Brewer does, that she is ostensibly our problem. But we will take your views on it, of course, as well. 0344 499 1000. We'll bring you that as soon as we have it. Kate Hoey is here with us as well. We'll talk to her about what's going on in Northern Ireland, what the Brexit deal is actually going to end up being. Is Rishi Sunak selling Britain down the river to Ursula von der Leyen and the rest of the cronies in the European Union? We'll also talk about this shortage of tomatoes and cucumbers and all the rest of it, which we are apparently suffering, if you believe the Ramonas, as a result of Brexit. It's got absolutely nothing to do with Brexit, everything to do with the weather, everything to do with the cost of energy, and everything, in fact, to do with this kind of mad dash for net zero. If you really want to blame it on something, blame it on that. But don't blame it, please, on Brexit, because that would be entirely wrong. 0344 499 1000. Peter Cardwell will be here with Prime Minister's questions a little bit later on in the day, after midday, of course. This is the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. We might talk a bit about Harry and Meghan as well. This is Talk TV. Welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham, the only place to get sane coverage of every single issue that there is in the world at the moment. We cover it from internationally, as we did yesterday with Vladimir Putin's speech and Joe Biden's speech in Warsaw, and of course everything else in between. Kate Hoey is here with us. Kate, very good morning to you.
Good morning.
Plenty to talk about this morning. I mean, we are, as we wait for this verdict on Shemima Begum, it's an appeal, I understand, from her and her lawyers to try and get permission to come back to this country. I'm not quite sure to do what, or to stand trial or anything like that, but what's your view on whether we should be taking her back or whether we should leave her where she is?
Well, I'm pretty clear that, you know, she gave up any attempt to be British when she left and went off to kill people, yeah. Basically, yeah. Whatever they say, she was involved. She must have known what was going on. And, you know, she's, as my mum would have said, she's made her bed, she should lie in it. And, I feel the worry is that if she comes back, for me, will be that she will become a superstar. Yeah. You know, she'll be one of these people that all the media will want to talk to her. She will make herself lots of money. She's reinvented herself now as a glamour almost glamorous.
Yes.
So I, but my instinct, and I may be wrong, is that the court will allow her back in.
Yeah.
Because
there's something of the sort of Patty Hearst about her, isn't there? I know that for younger viewers,
they
might remember who that is, but she was a very wealthy American sort of heiress, if you like, from the Hearst Foundation, the family that owns loads and loads of newspapers and media in America. And she went off and joined this sort of vaguely...
Bader Meinhof.
Yeah, the Bader Meinhof. But also, was she not involved with the Black Panthers at one point as well? That she was involved in some kind of weird Californian kind of sort of civil disobedience terrorist organisation. And she was pictured carrying guns and that. And she became this very glamorous figure, didn't she?
And then I think she wrote a book in the end and all of that. So
yes.
I don't know. I mean, we have this sort of... It's a sort of British thing about being kind, isn't it, and being, you know, morally that, you know, we shouldn't be deserting this poor...
Well, we have a sort of a section of society who believes that. I'm not sure everybody actually does.
Yeah, she was young when she went, but she was not much off the age that we get all these people clamouring for people to have a vote at 16, and yet they still try to say that she didn't really know what she was doing. But, you know, the pictures of them leaving, if you remember, there were pictures of them actually leaving. And she looked, you know, she looked pretty much as if she knew what she was doing.
Yeah. I mean, she looks very glamorous considering that she's supposedly in a refugee camp on the sort of Syrian-Iraq border, which you wouldn't have thought, normally speaking, would allow you to kind of, you know, brush up like that, really.
No, it's all a bit of there's certainly now, I think, people who are... who've cottoned on to her as an opportunity to get their own message across, and I think it would be hugely controversial if she is allowed back, much more so than if the appeal court says she can't come back.
Yes.
So we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, apparently the circumstances I'm led to believe are these. She did not apply for Bangladeshi citizenship, has never been a citizen of Bangladesh, even though I believe her father was, or may
Therefore,
well still
stateless.
Be.
Therefore, she's stateless.
So at the moment, she was supposed to have, if she wanted to apply for Bangladeshi citizenship, she should have done so by the time she was 21. She didn't do that. And so now she is effectively stateless. And according to the laws, as they've been explained to me, no British government can make somebody stateless. But we'll see whether this is a precedent
setting case. Well, if
she is
allowed back, I mean, she needs to be almost arrested on arrival.
Well, you would think so.
Arrested on arrival and then charged with... I mean, I know the problem is it's going to be extremely difficult for our courts to get evidence, you know, that proves she did some of the things that are alleged she's done. But I don't think she should be allowed to walk back in and simply walk into the studios and become a personality.
Yes.
She should be arrested.
I think
on
under
arrival.
The circumstances, if she was to be brought back, she would have to stand trial because she certainly admitted to committing all sorts of criminal acts, including helping in the killing of various individuals and also helping to sew, I believe, you know, suicide vests onto potential terrorists. So, I mean, she did take part in... And also, it's illegal, as far as I know, to join a prescribed terrorist organisation.
Well, it is a prescribed terrorist organisation.
So even if it's only that, she has to stand trial for that.
So, I mean, we'll see if Suella Braverman, the Home Secretary, meets her at the terminal.
Well, I mean, the best thing for her to do, I suppose, you might say, with tongue firmly in cheek, is to just jump on a dinghy in northern France and come into Dover, in which case nobody would care what she'd done.
No, well, that's what I told a friend of mine who was coming over recently and from Ghana and didn't get their visa. And I said, well, it's just go to France and find that, you know, pay that amount and get it.
Well, there will be, I mean, as crazy as that sounds, there will be people who actually are having these conversations in all parts of the world, just going, well, just get yourself to Britain on a dinghy because there's no way to stop
I'm amazed they haven't started to use speedboats, you know. Speed it up a bit.
Well,
more.
I mean,
you pay extra and you get there quicker.
Well, I mean, these boats they're currently
quicker.
Using, which are rather laughably described as small boats, are not very small. You know, they've got like 50 people on them. They're huge things and they go quite quickly and they're pretty seaworthy. You know, you could invade a country if you wanted with enough of these boats. So we'll come back to that.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about the other sort of Ramonery thing that's been going on in the last 24 hours or so. I was listening for my sins to PM yesterday on there. Because I tend to flip around when I'm in the car.
Yeah.
And you should have heard the BBC interviewer. So desperate was he to blame the tomato shortage on Brexit. He just kept asking, he got guest after guest after guest, kept saying things like, well, it's not as bad as this in the rest of Europe, is it? And they kept saying, well, actually it is. But in some parts of Europe, you pay more for your vegetables because they grow them at home.
Yeah.
And they pay more because they're currently using more electricity, which is more expensive. In this country, they've decided not to do that. But, I mean, just the same question kept coming up. But obviously it's something to do with Brexit. Are you sure Brexit's not involved? No. And it really isn't.
Well, I'm afraid that's the that's par for the BBC, which is why, you know, more people and more people are watching and listening to programmes like this and other media. It's clearly nothing to do with us leaving the European Union.
No.
It's clearly very much to do with the climate, with the energy costs, with all of those issues that are affecting so much else in the country. But, you know, also I think we've got to, and I've said this before, we've got to stop expecting in a country like the United Kingdom, where our climate is in a particular, we've got a particular climate, weather, that we have to get every type of vegetable and fruit from all over the world all year round. We didn't do that when I was young.
No.
You knew that you couldn't get that because, or if you, you might have been able to if you'd spent a huge amount of money. But the reality was, you know, there were seasonal things and we've got, we've lost our you know, we've lost the seasons.
Yes.
We don't think anymore in seasons. We think of everything being available all year round. And maybe people have to start realising.
Well, I say this about many things, is that we've now become such a society that's dependent upon getting everything instantly. You know, like people now will complain if you, they've ordered something on Amazon, it doesn't turn up the next day.
Mm.
I mean, you know, I know it's ridiculous to talk about when you and I were young, but, you know, you didn't send off the things. If you did send off for something, you'd probably wait about a month and a half for it to show up, you know. We had to save up. We had to get something on HP or, you know. Mm. But there wasn't this kind of instant society that we now have where everything is demand. You know, some people are now moaning that they don't get it the same day.
Yeah. But the other thing that I think is happening is farmers are now being... well, forced in the sense that they're being paid to actually take land out of growing things and you know, for the environmental reasons. Now, clearly, it's great that farmers need to look after the land and ensure that, you know, they can manage and coordinate working with birds and animals and all.
Let me just interrupt you. We've got breaking news. Jemima Begum has lost her appeal against the decision to remove her British citizenship. So that means she won't be coming back.
Wrong.
Well, it means I mean, so were all the legal experts who said, well, we can't do this. Well, apparently we can do it.
We
have done it.
It'll be very interesting to read the detail of what they say that. So it's actually been announced now. She's not.
So it's literally just announced at this moment. Jemima Begum, 23-year-old who left East London aged 15 to join the Islamic State in Syria, has lost her appeal against the decision to remove her British citizenship. So unless she may well take it to European court, I suppose, but...
Unless we're out of it before...
Well, that's another thing.
I mean, she... you know, the repercussions, if she had been allowed in, would have meant open door, really, for all sorts of other... I'm sure there are other people who... would have started to try and clear.
Well, I think there are people who have already been allowed back in. I mean, that's part of the problem, I think, part of the confusion. They may not have done things as badly as she did them, but I think there's at least 200 or more girls who have come back from being involved with ISIS in some way, shape or form. So it's a very murky kind of area, but I think it's the right decision.
I can just imagine what's going to happen in the House of Lords later today. There'll be some statement on this and all the... the liberal,
all the usual suspects,
will come out saying how shocking this is,
and that we have somehow, you know, let down the human rights of this country.
The moral,
it's a shameful day, like the way that they all attacked Suella Braverman when she started talking about this invasion of people that was coming across the Channel. So just once more for you, if you did not hear it, Jemima Begum, 23-year-old who left East London aged 15 to join Islamic State in Syria, has lost her appeal against the decision to remove her British citizenship. So she will not be back in this country. Well, remains to be seen whether she's going to seek an appeal. We're talking to Kate Hoey. We were talking about farming and agriculture and food. We'll come back to that. We've also got to talk still about what is going on in Northern Ireland, what is actually being discussed between Rishi Sunak and the European Union. Is he going to sell Brexiteers down the river? He better not, would be my suggestion. This is Talk TV.
Online on DAB+, Talk Radio and Talk TV.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk TV. Kate Hoey is here, fresh from the House of Lords, an unaffiliated peer. You'll be going down there later on, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
As you were saying, there'll be plenty of gnashing of teeth, no doubt, going on from the Liberal lot down there about Jemima Begum. But the decision, as we said just before the break there, is that she has lost her appeal, so she will not be returning to this country as a British citizen. We'll find out whether that changes, whether she can appeal any further to a European court. But we were talking just before that broke, Kate, about the sort of agriculture business and how, you know, it's very difficult. The reason why apparently British farmers are not producing their tomatoes at this time of year is because the energy costs are so high that they don't want to switch on, you know, the lights and the power to warm everything up so the greenhouses can be suitable places to grow things. And, you know, that should tell us, should it not, that something has to be done about these prices. It's just ludicrous. I mean, I got one the other day for a one-bedroom flat in London, which used to, my electricity bill used to be something like £170, £466 for a quarter. And it's just ridiculous, you know. Yeah. People are just, I mean, it's laughable, isn't it?
Well, I mean, and look how much of that bill, of your bill, is going on to, you know, the aspects of climate change,
yes,
isn't it?
I to mean, subsidise the green levies, yeah, to pay for failed companies. I don't understand why we're paying for companies that have failed.
I kind of detect a mood change too now amongst people about the whole issue of net zero, you know, that they are beginning to understand that net zero, even if we were to go to net zero, is not going to change the world's situation on climate change, and that really our country seems to be wanting to be in the lead on this, and all it's doing is making poorer people, indeed all of us, pay more for something that we should be having as a kind of basic right.
And I've had several arguments in the recent sort of last few weeks with people, because I've said, well, hang on a minute, now that the price of gas is coming back down, the wholesale price is lower than it was even a year ago, when is that going to be passed on to us? And they keep coming up with these sort of convoluted arguments about, well, you know, the system doesn't work like that, it doesn't react as quickly as that, it's going to be probably 6 months before that filters through. Well, why? You know, why can we not pay less? Why can this government not sort that out?
Well, I think you need the energy minister on here, and I don't suppose he would be able to give you much of an answer.
Well, now it's Grant Shapps, and I mean, last time he came on, he said to me, don't you want to be the world leader in onshore wind? And
no.
I said, to which I said no, and clearly nobody had ever given him that answer before, and he was completely stunned. I said, no, I don't, actually.
Well, you see, I think that's what more people have to sort of speak out and speak back, because they have been able to just, because there's been a unity of the parties on this. All the political parties, the three major on this, that this is something we can all agree on. Mm. And actually, the public is not anywhere near where the three parties are.
Not at all. And I think it's shown how far apart politicians and the real world have become, because that's really where we are now, isn't it? After COVID, after this net zero kind of obsession that they all seem to have, and everyone has it. It's not as if you can pick some organisation that doesn't, apart from maybe the Reform Party. It's just, you know, people are shaking their heads and going, when is it all going to end?
Well, there's always been cynicism about politics and politicians, but I've never seen it so deep at the moment. Because, you know, I remember after we left the European Union, there was a real feeling out there amongst, you know, people who didn't particularly care too much, but had voted to leave, got what they had voted for, and thought, this really is changing things. And it's kind of all just...
It's all just withered away, hasn't it? I remember there was very much a feeling of a new beginning. It was a bit like when Tony Blair went into Downing Street.
Yeah.
You know, there was
this
sort of feeling of renewal and something different and new and young children and all of that. And the same with Brexit. But it just didn't get a chance, really.
No. And now we've got a Prime Minister who, in theory, was voted to leave, but has really, along with his Chancellor, done absolutely nothing so far to actually prove that he understands the benefits that could come to this
country. And we're hearing people like James Cleverly, who was supposed to be a strong kind of Brexiteer, saying things like, well, of course, things have changed a bit since 2016 and we can now do a different deal with the EU over Northern Ireland. Well, no, I don't think you can. I mean, you know, it's not for watering it down, is it?
No, well, we're in this media hype at the moment about there being a deal on the table and a huge pressure on unionism, and particularly Sir Geoffrey Donaldson, to accept it. I mean, the Times had an editorial the other day which I thought was just shocking, basically saying, you know, ignore the unionists, ignore that, go ahead with it.
This was the Sunday
Be
Times,
nice
wasn't it?
Who
basically said that nobody's going to really like it, but, you know, let's just get on with it.
We've got to do this. And it's this, it gets back, ultimately, the big word is sovereignty. Mm. You know, are we actually in charge of our own country? And we're not, because the European Union is still running a part of the United Kingdom, and will continue to do so, not just on trading rules, but on things to do with the way that anyone in Northern Ireland is consulted about right. what's going to happen. So Rishi Sunak has a, you know, he has a choice to make. He can go ahead and he may well do it next week. I don't think he's going to do it this week now, come up with some kind of agreement.
But
nobody
what
has seen
be,
anything
though?
In writing.
Because, again, a bit like his plans to reduce inflation, even way back in the summer when he was running against Liz Truss, I remember having a couple of his supporters on and I said, look, he keeps talking about reducing inflation, but
what's
he doesn't
he going
say
to do?
How he's going to do it. And if he doesn't say how he's going to do it, and he really still hasn't. He's just waiting for it to kind of happen automatically.
Yeah, and, you know, if he doesn't, I mean, if he goes ahead in the budget and puts up corporation tax to 25%, that is basically an action that is so against the concept of what Brexit was going to do to our country. Because why would any big business, and we saw it there recently with AstraZeneca deciding to go to the Republic of Ireland, where corporation tax is 12.5%.
Yes. Deliberately low because they want to attract businesses.
And we have just, I'm not, of course, chancellors aren't necessarily economists either, but I just don't understand. It seems such common sense that we, of course, we want to get inflation down, but surely we want to get investment in the country and we want businesses to be able to get out there and do what they do best. And they don't do that if they're being dictated to by,
no, exactly.
by governments.
And I don't see how inflation comes down because you've put taxes up. I mean, that doesn't make any sense to any economist, I don't think. And the idea that they are even controlling inflation, I think, is for the birds, because inflation is already coming down. It looks like it's already peaked. Looks like it's going to be below 10% the next time it's measured. You know, and it'll take a while to get to 4%, but they believe, the Bank of England, that it gets to 4% by the end of this year.
But, you know, the message just on the whole Northern Ireland protocol thing, the bottom line is, unless Northern Ireland at the end is left part fully integrated part of the United Kingdom, we left as one country, we're supposedly left as the United Kingdom, then I don't think there'll be devolution in Northern Ireland.
No.
That won't come back. I think the Rishi Sunak risks really having a split again in his party and absolutely putting a complete no chance of keeping the red wall seats. And if he really wanted to keep those red wall seats, he would use the protocol now and the work, the negotiations with the EU to simply say to the European Union, sorry, we made a mistake. It should not have been signed.
Yeah.
It wasn't meant to be permanent. We now are going to change it.
And because they've certainly done that in other areas before. And there's absolutely no reasonable reason why Northern Ireland should be treated differently to every other part of the UK.
No, Belfast Agreement has already been broken by the fact that the cross-community consent has gone. And, of course, they're all desperate to get this sorted because they want President Biden to come
in April. Because they love him coming to celebrate.
And who cares?
I know. Absolutely ridiculous. He has no business getting involved. No. He has no business sticking his nose in. I mean, absolutely ridiculous. But what about Boris Johnson? Because he's kind of flirting with the outskirts of the leadership again. He's been making noises about Ukraine. He's been making noises about Brexit. Yeah. But, I mean, you have to say he is to some extent to blame for all this nonsense,
he signed up to it all because he wanted to get over the line on getting a withdrawal agreement. But he did know that it wasn't. I mean, I think he genuinely knew that it couldn't last.
Right.
But we'll sort that out later.
That's what I think he was doing.
But and of course, a lot of the European Research Group MPs who voted for it also did the same. But I think now they realise. I went to the ERG meeting last night, which was held with Geoffrey Donaldson, and it was very clear there that they realise now this is the opportunity to actually get this right, and there's no point having a deal that is kind of a little bit of movement, because in 6 months' time we'll be back to another problem. Medicines hasn't been sorted out, all sorts of things haven't been sorted out. So anyway, but as far as Boris is concerned, I mean, Boris is going to spend, obviously, I think the next year making a lot of money, because he wants to get all his
he clearly needs a lot of money. Yeah.
And he's going to bide his time and wait and see what happens. But I think there's more and more MPs who probably are beginning to just have that slight little tinge of thinking, maybe we shouldn't have just rushed in.
Yes. Well, it's the old story, isn't it? Even after Tony Blair went, you know, suddenly Gordon Brown was in charge and people were going, oh, God, is that what we're left with? You know. And then when you hear Boris Johnson in Parliament the other day speaking, you think, wow, he's really quite good at that.
Yeah, he is.
Even, you know, whether you like everything about him or not.
You never, ever can write off Boris, no. And I don't think anyone should, even though I know, you know, I know his faults, and I'm prepared to you know, to be critical. But I do think he's got something that no other Conservative politician
I think
has.
That's right. And all the people that support him and always have supported him are in that same boat, I think. They know that he's not perfect. He's not, you know, a flawless individual. Mm-hmm. However, he does have certain charms and talents that very few other people have. Kate, great to see you. Baroness Kate Hurry there, back in the House of Lords later on to argue about the Shemima Begum case, I'm sure. We'll be talking more about that coming up very shortly. Also, we'll be asking you, what's going on in your local supermarket? Because I'm not sure, like all shortages and all stories about shortages, that there is actually a shortage. I mean, I've got some tomatoes at home, if you want to borrow one. This is Talk TV.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
There are certain supermarkets that have got plenty of stuff, other supermarkets that don't. Let's talk to Oliver Whitfield Miocic, who's Talk TV's reporter. He's down in South London, Camberwell to be precise, outside of Morrison's. Oliver, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Mike. How are you doing?
Yeah, very well indeed. What's the? Is there a mad stampede going on for the fruit and veg aisles at the moment?
There is actually shortages inside this shop. When you walk inside, the first thing you come to is the fruit and veg section. And you can see there isn't a whole lot of tomatoes left. There's barely any peppers left. Cucumbers also in short supply. So when you walk in, you do see those empty shelves, all being blamed on the extreme weather in parts of Northern Africa and Spain. That is important to us at this time of year because obviously we don't really grow that much around this time. We depend on those countries to get our imports from. But the problems are also back home here in Britain. We've heard how huge energy costs means that farmers who use those big greenhouses which need to be heated in order to promote plant growth, they are scaling back on bringing forward those sorts of heating around their premises because it's just too expensive. So there is shortages. The supermarkets are saying it could last a few weeks, but they're urging people not to panic buy.
Yes, I mean, it's not really a good idea to panic buy fruit and veg, is it? Because you can't really store it very well. Because if you buy sort of, you know, a shed load of tomatoes, after about a week, they're going to start going off.
Yeah, well, that's the problem, isn't it? Unless you start pickling. But I don't know if you've ever tried to pickle a tomato
before.
I don't think it's going to go very well.
No, but it's a good idea, though. I like the idea.
Yeah, well, let's see. Maybe we'll start a new trend here on Talk TV.
Yes.
We have heard, though, that the prices of wholesale things like tomatoes have doubled compared to last year. They're now worth around £14 a crate.
Right.
And when you look at peppers, those have gone up by around three times their usual price.
Mm.
Speaking this morning at the National Farmers Union Congress, we heard from the Environment Secretary, Therese Coffey, saying how there will be an important summit later on to do with food security. We can expect that later this year. She also hailed the role of British farmers, saying that they play a vital role in keeping the country fed. But British farmers are calling out to be included in a discount energy scheme, which is currently geared towards more manufacturing intensive industries. They say if they could get a part of that, then they could fire up these greenhouses and get more British produce out onto the shelves.
Yes, I mean, it's obviously going to be one of these things that we watch for a while, but listening to all of the various arguments yesterday, it's very clear that it's very much weather related in the south of Spain and so much so similarly in Morocco, apparently, where most of this stuff comes from. But I've also had a lot of people tweeting me this morning, Oliver, saying that down in Kent they've grown plenty of tomatoes and they've got surpluses down there. So if anybody's looking for a supply chain, they could go and get them. It's just that some of the supermarkets don't want to pay the more expensive prices for them.
Yeah, well, supermarkets have got very, very intricate supply chain systems. They've all got their own different suppliers. A lot of it comes from abroad because of how big the supermarkets are. The economies of scale mean that they've got to buy in huge amounts of bulk. However, going down my local high street, certainly the greengrocer there has got plenty of supply of tomatoes from various parts of the world that all look ripe, all look really tasty. But when you go down to your local supermarket or even down to your local greengrocer, you might start noticing those prices going up. I bought four beef tomatoes the other day. I mean, there were some sort of fancy one that my wife wanted. I ended up paying £4.50 for them. I know Linden's expensive.
That is a lot of money. For first line, more than a pound per tomato. That is a lot of money. You've obviously been paid far too well, Oliver. We'll have to have words with the management. Thank you very much indeed. Oliver Whitfield-Majocic there talking about, imagine paying £4.50 for four beef tomatoes. Incredible. But listen, don't believe the hype is what I would say. Do you remember when we did Shortage of the Day back in the days before Christmas? There was going to be turkey shortages. There was going to be chicken shortages. We did all sorts of things that were supposedly running out. This is supermarkets not being able to manage their supply chain. It's as simple as that. There are plenty of tomatoes in Britain. There are plenty of people growing tomatoes in Britain. In fact, I want to hear from all of you out there to tell us what's happening on the streets. I was in a supermarket just at the weekend, and they had loads of fruit and vegetables. There was no shortages of anything, and it was one of the big chains. And it was also, by the way, rammed with people who were filled, who were carrying filled baskets, filled shopping trolleys. I mean, this idea that, you know, there's some kind of a cost of living crisis going on when you can see people are spending loads of money at the supermarket. And this was not in a wealthy area at all. It was full of people who were clearly hard-working people, but who didn't have an awful lot of money. But they were absolutely buying up the shop. Incredible. 0344 499 1000. The breaking news, of course, that we brought you just a little while ago. Shamima Begum has lost her appeal against the decision to remove her British citizenship, which means she will not be returning to these shores. An awful lot of people very pleased with that decision. And thank goodness the Supreme Court has come to that conclusion. So she basically is a stateless individual, and she will have to stay where she is, which is in a refugee camp somewhere in Syria. Let's talk to Rafe Heidel-Mankou, historian, broadcaster and senior fellow at the New Culture Forum. Rafe, I think we were all dreading this going the wrong way and suddenly being responsible for this ghastly individual. Seemingly, the Supreme Court has seen the light.
Yes, you know, we've become so used to being disappointed by our institutions these days that, you know, we were sort of worrying how this would go. But it's good to see this decision made. And in fact, on every step along this process, Shamima Begum has been thwarted by the courts and by the government. So we have to actually take our hats off there. The important thing also to note here is that there's a lot of information that we don't know, stuff that is private. And only being released in these private discussions, the security services still regarded Shamima Begum as a genuine security risk. And I think that is the one of the predominant factors behind this. And this has happened despite the media trying to rehabilitate Shamima Begum and turn her into some sort of reality TV celebrity. Yeah. We've seen these very soft articles about her in recent months. We've had the BBC giving her her own podcast, quite disgraceful, actually. Yes. when you consider that how little attention has been given to the victims of ISIS, right, give one of the perpetrators of their cruelty such a platform is quite despicable.
Well, so exactly. And also many of the people who sort of championed Shamima talk about her being groomed practically, which was not something even her lawyers thought up until relatively recently. You know, she's previously admitted to enjoying what she did. She's previously admitted to harming all sorts of people who were the victims of ISIS who ended up dead. She's also responsible for the shaming and the terrible treatment of some of the Yazidi women. She's championed by some feminists in this country who don't seem to care about that. You know, I mean, I just think that she is somebody who has changed her mind so many times whenever it suited her in order to try and get her life back. And I mean, I don't think she deserves it.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, people say, oh, well, she was a young teenager when she went out there. Actually, in 2019, when she was first interviewed, first discovered in the refugee camp, she was already 20 years old by that point. And she said she had no regrets about joining ISIS. Yeah. It was only once her British citizenship became perilous for her that she suddenly changed her tune. Yes. And adopted Western dress. So let's remember that. Mm. And as you quite rightly say, to all those bleeding heart liberals out there who are upset by this injustice, you know, save your tears for those poor Yazidi women who were enslaved, kept as sex slaves. Think about all of those people tortured, set on fire, beheaded. Yes. Let's be honest about what was going on in these places whilst she stood by. And think of all of their families mourning the loss of their dearly loved ones today. Those are the ones who we should be reaching out to rather than someone like this.
Exactly right. And I know you're not a lawyer, Rafe, but is there a place for her to go after this? The Supreme Court is obviously the highest court in the land in this country, but can she take this to Europe?
I don't think she can take this to Europe, but it's important to remember that you can't take citizenship away from someone and leave them stateless.
Yeah.
Now, by virtue of her ancestry and her parents, she can actually claim, and she does have, by virtue of descent, Bangladeshi citizenship.
Mm.
But the problem there is if she goes to Bangladesh, she will face the death penalty for her ISIS affiliations, something which I think people here should actually realise actually how what a light touch Britain is compared to other countries.
Exactly. And of course, we've also heard this morning that, you know, if she wanted to have citizenship in Bangladesh, she should have applied by the time she was 21, and she's no longer under that particular age. But if she does remain stateless, then I guess she just has to stay in this refugee camp, does she?
Exactly. We'll go to Syria if she can, if they'll have her there. I mean, this is it. She's stuck. She's made her bed, and now, unfortunately, it's a refugee camp bed, and she has to basically be happy and content. But it comes to a broader issue because there are lots of people who went to Syria with ISIS from Britain, extremists who were radicalised and went to fight there, who only have British citizenship, who have come back and pose a genuine security risk. Because, as I say, you cannot take away citizenship from people if they will be left stateless. It's an important part of the UN.
Yeah.
Now, I've previously argued that, we have various types of British citizenship, one of which is British subject status or British overseas territory status, even. So I think it would be worthwhile seeing whether all of these people who've been engaged in terrorist activities and fighting in Syria for ISIS.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Could have their citizenship tweaked so that they retain British subject status, but don't have the right of abode in the UK, and they'll be forced to stay on the continent or wherever they are.
Interesting. Terry in Ramsbottom says something interesting here. Jemima Begum isn't stateless. She's a citizen of Islamic State. If you can be a citizen of the EU, which isn't a country, then she can also be a citizen of Islamic State. I wonder if we can make that argument.
Yes, well, that's a very good point. I think that would somehow validate their claims to being a state, though. So I think
it might do. I suppose you'd have to be a bit careful. Yeah, the Levant or something like that. Rafe, very good to talk to you. Thank you very much indeed. Rafe Heidel-Mankoo, historian, broadcaster, senior fellow at the New Culture Forum there, giving his view on the very sensible decision. Isn't it nice to say that the Supreme Court, the judiciary in this country, has actually got something right? They've made the right decision. They have denied Jemima Begum the right to return to this country and to have British citizenship. They've said she cannot have it. They have refused her appeal. And I say, bloody well done. This is Talk TV.
On your mobile, on your wavelength, Talk Radio and Talk TV.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk TV. It is Wednesday. Prime Minister's Questions returns today, so we'll be going live to the House of Commons at 12 o'clock midday. Between now and then, of course, though, we've got plenty still to talk about. Jemima Begum, top of the list at the moment. She's been denied the right to British citizenship. The Supreme Court made an incredibly good decision for a change today, just about an hour ago, less than that, in which they said that her appeal is to be denied. So she will not be coming back to this country. She will not become a British citizen. She has lost her British citizenship, whether she is stateless or not, and does not seem to bother the Supreme Court. But lots of you have got plenty to say about it. We'll take your calls, of course, 0344 499 1000. Coming up in this hour, though, we're going to talk to Mike Neville, who is, of course, a former police officer, a man that knows a thing or two about investigating missing persons reports, investigating murders and all the rest of it. He's going to give us his view on what happened up in Lancashire. Lancashire police, of course, still very much under scrutiny. Two independent investigations ongoing. They've referred themselves to the police watchdog. And this morning, front page of The Sun says this: Nicola Copps failed my sister too. And it's another family talking about how their One of their members of the family disappeared, and they told the police, and the police sort of botched that, and she ended up committing suicide, partly due to the fact that the police didn't track her when they should have been able to do it. Mike's got a piece in The Sun today as well, in which he says in the headline, at every stage it's been inept cops who have fuelled the rumours about Nicola. And of course this is a Nicola Bulley case, which has been a terrible, terrible situation, not only for the family of Nicola, but also, of course, for everybody who cares about what the police do in this country. Mike, a very good morning to you.
Yeah, thanks, good morning, Mike.
Thanks for joining us. We'll get on to Nicola Bulley and the case up in Lancashire in a moment, but let's just mention Shemima Begum first. I mean, I think, unusually, the judiciary seems to have done the right thing today.
Yeah, it's quite amazing, isn't it? And yeah. I think people will be utterly shocked, because most people would have thought they would have rolled over. I mean, we see all these documentaries where she's almost portrayed now as some kind of supermodel.
Yeah.
Let her back. She's all dolled up. Let her back in the country. But I think what people will be thinking of, if we can deny her the right to be here, why are we letting thousands of individuals cross the channel who are, we don't know if they're murderers, rapists, right, or whatever else. And they seemingly just shipped in. Where I live up in Staffordshire, there's a hotel full of these people who've just been brought in. So if we can be robust and keep her out, how come they can't be robust?
It's a very good point. I mean, I made a joke rather earlier when Kate Hoey was here. I said, well, perhaps what she'll do is, if she can't come here legally and she can't have British citizenship, just get on a dinghy. And I mean, she'd be guaranteed to get a space in a hotel, wouldn't she?
Yeah, absolutely. This is the craziness. And I think people looking at this, you know, you've got a very small minority who portray these people as, you know, persecuted, fleeing from war.
Yeah.
You know, the war that's occurring in Calais, of course. And we're just sick to death of it. You know, the population are sick of it. Is this the turning point? We can only hope, but I somehow doubt it, because it just carries on.
But certainly many people have said the reason why she shouldn't be allowed back into this country is that she would actually be a potential terrorist threat. Because it's all very well, as you say, looking at her as this kind of, you know, woman who's turned over a new leaf, and she's now sort of, you know, fashion clothes horse, and she wears very nice glasses, and her hair always looks great. For somebody in a refugee camp, I've never seen somebody so well turned out, you know. But, you know, clearly she is dangerous. She has been dangerous. She's proven herself to be involved in the killing of innocent people. Why on earth would we want her back?
Well, the madness is, you see, the people, there's a lot on the left who will say, oh, she was 16, she was a child. They'll come out with all this nonsense. These are the same people who then tell you that at 16 you should be able to vote. So it's either one thing or the other.
Yeah.
You know, you're either a child at 16. I was a soldier at 16.
Mm.
But you're either a child at 16 or you're not a child.
Right.
And the left seems to have great difficulties with that. It's always when it suits them. So
yes.
when she's a victim,
so it's
a child.
So it's all right for Greta Thunberg to be telling us what to do when she's 15, but this woman didn't know what she was doing.
Of course. Yeah. That's exactly it.
Yeah, it's absolutely mad. Let's talk about what happened in Lancashire. Obviously, the terrible news that broke late on Monday, in fact, it was before that, wasn't it? Before the weekend, the body that they had found was, in fact, Nicola Bulley. The police have come in for an awful lot of criticism. What's your take? I mean, obviously, you've written this piece saying that it's their fault that the Nicola rumours were being fuelled by the police. Tell us about that.
It is tragic, isn't it? I mean, particularly for the partner, particularly the children.
Mm.
But the whole investigation, the start of the investigation, when she was classified as high risk, at the start of it seems to be done quite well, in the sense of the TARSO, helicopters and drones, and then it seemingly went downhill, in the sense that, you know, that things like the bench were not forensicated. She had digital devices on her, like keys and a Fitbit, which the Lancashire police, all the police forces are very insular. They didn't call in experts to try and find those digital devices. And then we had the fiasco of this Foldling, the search expert, and he will claim, well, the police didn't give me all the facts. Why didn't they share all the facts? But then again, he searched nearby. The trouble is with all this, of course, a river. We look at the river stretch, and there's, like, if you look at the photograph, there's a whole straight river, and then there's a set of bushes. And you only have to look at it to think, where would you look? But searching in a river is always difficult. It's dirty, grimy, depends how deep it is.
Yeah.
And I said at the time that the parallel case to this is a case called Anthony Knott, who was a fireman who went missing, sadly, after a Christmas do 3 years ago. His body was 8 miles downstream 21 days later.
Right.
Nicola was found 22, 23 days later. This is how it works.
Right. Wasn't so far away as
she
that,
wasn't.
Though, was
she was only 1 mile away. And the police have now got to look at who was responsible for searching that area of the river, because it does seem inept
yes.
that she was just 1 mile away. and there's a set, one set of reeds.
Yes.
And it's no good the search expert saying, I was only told to search the river, not the reeds. Well, the reeds and the river are one thing, aren't they? And it just seems an entire mess.
Yeah.
Added to all this is the fact that, firstly, the police told untruths, really. They actually said that she was a Mrs. Average, mum, looking after, you know, with the children. That was not true.
Mm.
Then they released a statement about a domestic incident, safety, which fueled rumours,
yes,
of course, that her other half was somehow involved in all this. And then because of that, they released all this information about her personal life, her personal problems. And my mother used to say, there's some things that men don't need to know. And there's some things that all of us didn't need to know. And we literally didn't need to know that. And it was all released. So the people who were really too bad in all this, I think the Lancashire Police Press Office, the way they've been mistrustful of the media, they've not used the media properly, they've accused the media of doing this, that. The media are not, just report things.
Mm.
The police have got to really look at why they absolutely have.
And I think an awful lot of this will be the fault of the relationships breaking down, generally speaking, between the media and the police. Because, Mike, you'll know, we both worked I was in newspapers, you were in an active police officer at the time when media and the police had a very good relationship. You know, I'm talking sort of 20 years ago, when you could have a drink with somebody like yourself who worked. I remember we used to drink with the Snow Hill guys all the time, you know, who are up at, it's one of the police operations up in sort of Holborn. And, you know, they would talk about things. They weren't giving away any secrets. But you would have the ability to kind of get information from people. And there was a certain level of trust that, you know, we could ask you something, you could tell us the answer, or you could tell us you couldn't tell us the answer, but you could give people a steer. It seems to me that now you've got police operations like the Lancashire Police run by kind of people who don't understand what that relationship is all about. And somebody must have told the press office to release that information. Somebody must have made the decision that, we better get this out there before somebody finds out that we've paid a visit to the house. But it wasn't at all well handled, was it?
It was handled very, very badly. I mean, in the Met, the press office used to be called the Department for Public Affairs, DPA, and we referred it as Don't Publish Anything.
Yes.
They were just utterly dreadful individuals who hindered.
And we always used to go around them anyway.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know.
And what I would, I mean, me, I had, my job was to get criminals identified. I needed the press on board. And I found, if you said to a reporter, like, I'll tell you this, but you can't, if you publish it, I'll never give you anything again. People know the rules, and that trust, it's been broken down. And what happens all the time is that the Leveson Inquiry, they bring in these rules which are supposed to formalise things, and all it does is just mess up human relationships, which are beneficial for the public because more criminals are identified. You can say to a reporter on a murder, when somebody is involved, you can say, can you ask this question in the press when the person appears? You can work together with the journalist to get good results, and that's all been ruined, really.
It has, because let's not forget that when they did issue that statement about the visit to the home, it was, you know, it was possible to misinterpret that in so many different ways, because we were all asking the questions, saying, well, what could that have been about? Was it about the welfare of Nicola? Was it about the welfare of the children? Was it about the welfare of the husband or the partner? Nobody really knew. So that kind of fueled also all the crazy people who were thinking of themselves as sort of TikTok detectives turning up, which I've never seen anything like before.
Yeah, I mean, that's a phenomenon that will grow and grow. We've just got to accept that will happen. But so many people, of course, will have seen real-life murder cases where the husband or whatever appears on a stage crying, you know, crocodile tears, come home, please.
Yes.
And then a week later, they're in handcuffs because they have that person. How many times have we seen that? So many different times.
Mm.
You know, we had that. Remember that woman Tracy, somebody who stabbed her boyfriend to death, all the tears on the stage.
Remember that very well.
You know, so the public will have seen that. And of course, we're all cynics. And you get a press release saying, oh, the police have been around there, domestic incident. Ah, no. And it was so badly handled. And I just feel sorry for the family to be thrust into the limelight. Who wants to go to the shop in the morning and see your loved one on the front page of a paper because you don't know where they are?
Right.
And it was. And what the other thing about the releasing of all that information, of course, is at that time, Nicola hadn't been found.
Mm.
And if she had just decided, life's too much, I'm going to disappear, I'm going to go and wherever, that release of information would have made it less likely, if she had been alive, to say, I am coming home, because of the actual embarrassment of it. So operationally, it was just a really inept thing to do.
Right. And so presumably now they'll be involved in the coroner's investigation in trying to find out what the cause of death was, what the time of death was. And really, until we get that information, it's impossible to sort of close it all down, really. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we know there's a sort of 10-minute window where no one knew where Nicola was or didn't see her. So there's just 10 minutes they've got to account for. Of course, it's very difficult when a body's been in the water for so long. But you have got these things like the Fitbit and things like then keys. Mm. If you remember that case with the Greek helicopter pilot who murdered his wife and then claimed Albanians had broken... The way that they could say that was untrue is because the iWatch had stopped, her heart had stopped beating.
Right.
Well, this is it.
I mean, there's more technology now than there ever was. And so in some ways it should make the police's job easier. But police forces up and down the country seem to be making it more difficult for themselves.
Well, the trouble is with the police can be very good. And there are lots, I've got to say, there are lots of good officers who are brave, dedicated. Today there'll be somebody facing a gun or facing a knife. There'll be lots of brave, dedicated officers. What it is, though, is the leadership. And if you look at things like the Fitbit, the keys, the police are hopeless at digital. They don't keep up. So they're fighting the digital evidence war with the bows and arrows and slingshots. You know, they just haven't got the technology. And that's down to one of the other enemies they had in the police was the IT department. Mm. They were scoundrels of the highest order. You know, they would rather stop people working because they had to do some work. You know, so it is so bad in the police that they don't have a grip. Mm. So criminals, those keys, for example, that she should have in her pocket, a criminal could sit outside your house on a laptop, break into those keys, steal your car.
Yeah.
But the police, they don't know how to do
that. That's astonishing, isn't it? They need to hire a few,
crooks.
Crooks to actually teach them how to do stuff. Unbelievable. Mike, good to talk to you. Thank you very much. Indeed, Mike Neville's got a piece in the Sun today. Go and read it. You can find it online. We'll put it out from here as well. Coming up, we'll take more of your calls, though. 0344 499 1000 is the number. This is Talk TV.
Online, on DAB+, Talk Radio and Talk TV.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk TV. Geraldine says this, if Shemima Begum came to the UK, she would be on the terror watch list for the rest of her life, along with around 39,000 other Islamist extremists currently under surveillance, costing the British taxpayer millions of pounds. Well, it was revealed yesterday, I think, that if Shemima Begum came back to this country, it would cost something in the order of £1 million per year just to monitor her, if that was what was going to be done. Other people think that she should have stood trial. Some people believe that it is our responsibility to put her on trial and then to punish her in our own way in this country. I do not believe that. I think that the Supreme Court has actually done the right thing by refusing her application to get her British citizenship back. And I frankly don't care where she lives. People are saying, oh, it doesn't make Britain a very fair country if you don't look after your own citizens. Well, she has abrogated her responsibility as a British citizen. She's involved herself in a terrorist organisation, which is already a crime. If she was to be brought back to this country to serve time and to stand trial, that would cost the taxpayer even more money. And I think most taxpayers would not wish to see that done. But let's talk to Chris Phillips now, former head of the National Counter-Terrorism Security Office, to see what he makes of the decision. Chris, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Mike.
Thanks very much indeed for joining us. I don't know whether you share my view on this, but I don't see why we should have responsibility for someone who has willfully left this country, joined up with a terrorist organisation willingly, and then committed terrorist acts quite happily, who now says, oh, I'm very sorry about that. I'd like to come back and live in Britain.
No, I'm in complete and utter agreement with you, I'm afraid, Mike. This may not be a great interview because we're batting off... same wicket here. She deliberately left this country at a time when there were regular beheading videos and things. Everyone knew what ISIS were up to over in Syria and Iraq. Everyone knew that. She knew that. She decided to go. And what happened is she doesn't like where she is now. And she suddenly started making and using PR people and other advisors to find ways of getting her back into the UK, and it's just not acceptable.
No,
I think anyone would think, Mike, that this is all over. ISIS are a thing of the past. They still exist, and there are lots of people that still follow their ideology.
Yes, and I mean, there are plenty of people apparently who have already been out to see ISIS and joined them in a slightly less, shall we say, high profile way than Shemima Begum, who have been let back into the country, which is also for me a ridiculously bad idea.
Yeah, I mean, a criminal justice system does not protect people. That is as simple as that. It would be lovely to think that people that are a risk to society, that are willing to blow people up and kill people, would be locked away or at least dealt with in some way. But that's not the case, unfortunately. And, you know, Shamima Begum was talking about the attack in Manchester being justified.
Yeah.
Loads of other people in this country feel the same. And, you know, if you listen to Mac Duke just a week or so ago, you know, the threats of terrorism and terrorist attack are really real. And there's lots and lots of investigations ongoing at this moment.
Yeah. Well, I think we're told that at any given time, there are sort of thousands of investigations going on. And as they famously said in the IRA, they only have to be lucky once. We have to be lucky absolutely all the time. So we could do without importing any more, really. Thanks.
Yeah. And the fact that, she would go and do anything herself again, but she is a threat because of her views and what she's done. And being a poster girl for this whole... these massacres that took place, this is not some bad crime. This is people being thrown off buildings, people being burnt alive, girls being pushed into slavery. Not her, by the way, but girls that she was actually working against, actually being put through, proper people trafficking and then put into slavery. And she was all part of that.
And a very willing part of it as well. And she was involved in torturing people. She helped her husband, who's in prison in the Netherlands, to kill people. She's admitted that in the past. You know, and she said that she has no regrets as well. I mean, it's all very convenient that she's now doing a podcast for the BBC. She appears on the cover of magazines in this country. But no, thank you. I think she stays where she is and we never see her again.
Yeah, it's quite disgusting, actually, the amount of publicity this woman's had when you've got thousands of Yazidi women that have been raped and murdered have had nothing. And you know, we do live in a funny situation where these people are suddenly put up. You know, you can imagine, Mike, that in 2 years' time, if she had been really allowed back into this country, she'd be on Strictly Come Dancing. Something ridiculous like that because of the way our media works. It's completely ridiculous.
It really is. And how much of a problem is terrorism in this country? And so, you know, when you were at the National Counterterrorism Security Office, it is very difficult to monitor people because one of the things we always find out about if there is a terrorist attack is that at some point or other, the subject or whoever carried out the attack was probably under some watch scheme, but then somehow left the watch scheme and weren't any longer being watched. How does that all work?
Well, if you give the security services and the police an impossible job to do, then you're not going to be surprised when people get through the net. You know, there are an enormous number. I mean, 39,000 has been quoted across the UK that are a real concern. As you follow that or monitor that number of people, you don't. You have to risk assess. You have to decide the people that are most likely to do something bad and then be lucky that you're absolutely right all the time. Because, listen, success is when nothing happens. You know, if you don't have any terrorist attacks, that's success.
Yeah.
But of course, what happens with the media and others is they forget about that and the public forget about that this is going on in the background. And, there are some very, very dangerous people in our society.
Yeah. And I mean, that's going to continue to be the case for quite a long time, isn't it? Because we do seem to have this. I mean, we've seen all the problems Prevent had, where they seem to sort of think that some people had been cured in some way of their extremism when they clearly hadn't been. You know, we do have an unfortunate kind of habit of thinking that people can get better and that people can actually stop being horrible. But the truth is, if you want to be horrible, you're always horrible.
Mike, is even worse than that because we've now got people that have actually been convicted of serious terrorist offences are being released back into society completely, still radicalised. And the fact that they've done something once is just going to make them far more likely to go and do it again. And we've seen that. We've seen that on London Bridge. We've seen that in Streatham, where people that are almost immediately they've been released from prison go off and do it again. They've got no desire not to be radicalised. And, you know, it's a very, very dangerous situation.
Yeah, it really is. Well, Chris, look, I'm really glad we got a chance to talk to you. Thank you very much indeed. Chris Phillips there, former head of National Counterterrorism Security here in the UK. He now runs the thing called the International Protect and Prepare Security Office because, you know, he knows better than anybody how dangerous Shamima Begum would be if she came back to this country, whether she decided to kind of, you know, abandon her terrorist roots or not. she would still be very much a poster girl for extremists, and she would be somebody that would be looked upon as a bit of a kind of celebrity terrorist, which is not something that we should be enjoying or employing in any way, shape or form. I'm very glad that she's been denied the right to have her citizenship back in this country, and I'm very happy that she's going to stay where she is. And I think most sensible people would say exactly the same thing. 0344 499 1000 is the number. We'll come back with some more of your calls and much, much more. This is Talk TV.
Nationwide, by your side, Talk Radio and Talk TV.
Welcome back to the Independent Republican, Mike Graham, right here on Talk TV. Don't miss exclusive radio commentary coming up of Jake Paul versus Tommy Fury on TalkSport this Sunday night. Listen to TalkSport on DAB, download the app, or via TalkSport.com. That is this Sunday night, of course, right here on our network, TalkSport. Coming up, we're going to speak to Hamish de Bretton Gordon. Just before that, a couple of tweets and texts for you. One here from Ebenezer, who says, can Britain now use the same judge that refused traitor Shemima Begum to return to the UK to get the migrants on a plane to Rwanda? Well, that might work. Ollie says, the idea anyone needs to panic around the availability of tomatoes boggles the mind. If someone can't go a few weeks without tomatoes, they need to give their head a wobble. And a couple more on Shemima Begum. David says, don't forget, if she came here, it would cost us millions of pounds a year for her security, housing, welfare, etc. She's already cost us millions in legal costs. And Linda says, I'm so glad she's been denied her citizenship. She can now get on with the rest of her life in a Muslim country where their ideology is more in line with hers. Well, certainly she's in a refugee camp somewhere, I think, on the Syria-Iraq border, which can't be a very pleasant place to be. But then she doesn't deserve to be in a particularly pleasant place, does she? 0344 499 1000. Let's talk now to former British Army colonel and chemical weapons expert Hamish de Bretton Gordon. Hamish, a very good morning to you. Yesterday, we saw quite a big number of sort of developments. We saw Vladimir Putin's two-hour speech in which he blamed the West for the invasion of Ukraine and said it was all their fault. Basically, he said that Russia was simply defending its history, defending its way of life, defending its culture. Basically trying to convince his home audience, I suppose, that Russia is in some way in danger. Joe Biden then made a big speech in Warsaw. He was in Ukraine the other day. There does seem to have been a lot of activity this week. What do you think it's sort of aimed at? Where do you think it's got us?
Well, I think there are a number of things, Mike, and thanks very much for having me on. We've got the 12-month, the year anniversary coming up on Friday. And I think, first of all, with Putin, I mean, his two-hour rant yesterday, you know, it's not the sort of things that he was saying that you'd want to hear from an autocratic dictator who has enough nuclear weapons to destroy the planet. Some of the stuff he's saying there about pulling out of nuclear treaties, potentially to start testing his nuclear again. So very much, as you say, for his home audience, and I think also for the henchmen, the strongmen around him who are probably keeping him in power. Conversely, Biden, after his trip to Kyiv this week, really stating again that the US and NATO is absolutely full score behind Ukraine, and we must enable Ukraine to prevail, because if we don't, there could be even worse problems down the line. So I think it is a very important week where Russia military conventionally is failing. Ukraine is getting the upper hand. And during all of this conflict, Putin has always waved the nuclear flag, really to try and keep NATO out. But that thus far has failed.
And does it inevitably lead to NATO becoming more involved? Because, I mean, Joe Biden said yesterday that, you know, NATO has never been more united. It's never been stronger. It's never been a more kind of powerful organisation. He mentioned Finland and Sweden as well wanting to join. You know, it feels as though he's sort of ratcheting up the rhetoric from NATO's side as well.
Well, I think so. I think it's absolutely essential that Russia's illegal invasion of Ukraine is not allowed to prevail. It is key that the West and NATO shows a very strong arm. The reason I think that Putin invaded in the first place a year ago is that he thought NATO was weak. He thought that NATO would do nothing, you know, which was fair enough, because we did very little to help people in Syria who were also under attack from not only their own regime, but also the Russians. So it was our fault. And it's taken us 12 months to get to a position where we're saying, no, this sort of illegal adventurism by the Russians will not be tolerated. And we will protect Ukraine because, you know, I'm of the group who agree that Ukraine would not be the end of it. So we have got to be resolute. And we've also got to be resolute on the nuclear issue. I still think, despite what Putin is saying, that it is unlikely that Putin will go nuclear in Ukraine. But we have all been assuming, I think, for the last 12 months, that Putin will not go nuclear. And it might sound rather counterintuitive, but I think we should assume that he will go nuclear and plan against it so that Putin realizes that we're serious here and in a sort of double bluff. But we mustn't allow his threats, you know, every month of dirty bombs, nuclear attack, chemical attack, biological attack, to make us waver and not continue to support Ukraine until the end.
Quite. A lot of people think as well, Hamish, that there's going to be some kind of activity militarily on Friday because Russia believes quite a lot in these kind of anniversaries, and it's the one-year anniversary, as you say. Certainly some people in Kiev are worried that there might be an attack launched. Is that a sort of a verifiable threat, if you like?
Well, I'm not sure that the intelligence coming out of the Donbass and elsewhere are necessarily indicating some great thrust. I don't think the Russians have the combat power to do it. Ukraine has done a fantastic job thus far with Western weaponry tipping the balance. We know that the armour, we know the tanks are going to be due in combat in a few weeks' time, and that again will tip the balance. Sadly, I expect the Russians will try and do something spectacular on Friday. No doubt it'll be a whole host of missiles aimed at Kyiv and other major cities in Ukraine. And let's hope those air defences that have done such a good job thus far carry on doing it. But as far as anything more than that, be it a major thrust in the Donbass or up from Crimea, I don't really see that. The intelligence isn't there. And I think it really goes back to my beginning piece here that Putin is getting into a tight corner. He is losing. His options are getting less and less. And Ukraine is only getting more powerful. And hopefully we, the West, can enable Ukraine to prevail this summer, get the Russians out of their country. Then we can have a peace and start to rebuild this country, which has absolutely been flattened by the Russians.
Yeah. It's been pummeled, isn't it? Absolutely pummeled. Is there a danger that China might sort of find themselves moving closer to Russia, though, in this kind of world game of chess, if you like?
Absolutely, Mike. I think the Chinese dynamic is absolutely key to this and as important. And I think we heard news today and yesterday that senior Chinese officials are in Moscow. And Biden's made it absolutely clear, I think, to Beijing that any advanced weaponry given to the Russians by the Chinese would be tantamount to China getting into bed with Russia. And I'm sure that the Americans have the influence of the Chinese, not least because the Chinese economy is almost entirely based on the US market. But China is a key issue here. We know China is tripling its holdings of nuclear warheads to a size to compare with the UK and France, not at the levels of Russia and the US. But it is very important that they stay out of this. And I'm sure that Biden is making it very clear to the Chinese that that would not be tolerated. But you're absolutely right. They are a key player. And them staying out thus far has made sure that this hasn't expanded outside the sort of Ukraine theatre of operations. And that's how it should remain. And I hope that, the Americans and the NATO allies are also making that clear to the Chinese.
No, of course. Hamish, thank you very much indeed. Hamish de Breton-Gordon, former British Army colonel, chemical weapons expert as well, saying that there is a Chinese dynamic to these negotiations or this situation now with Ukraine, and it has got to be very, very closely monitored, of course. Coming up, we're going to have Prime Minister's questions, Rishi Sunak versus Keir Starmer. Let's have a couple of calls first, though. Shaz is in Birmingham. Hi, Shaz.
Yeah, hello, sir. How are you doing?
Yeah, very well indeed. What can I do for you?
Yeah, I just wanted to to talk about Shamina Begum.
Okay.
Yeah, my personal thoughts are, like, there's so much hatred in the world. What we should do is bring Shamina Begum back, not because of what she's done, but so the MI5 and the government can get intelligence from her, put in a secure uni, gather all the intelligence so we can protect ourselves from ISIS in the future.
Yeah, well, I mean, it may well be that that would be beneficial, but they could do that, presumably, by just going out to Syria, couldn't they?
Well, they could, but then again, Syria is a dangerous place at the moment, especially with earthquakes and ISIS, that's where ISIS' main base is.
Yeah. So I mean, I'm not sure. What do you think we could learn from her, though? Because, I mean, I think...
A heck of a lot, because she's lived with ISIS, because she's, like, joined ISIS. She's got so much intelligence that the government and the MI5 can use so we can protect people of this country and other countries.
Yeah, she might even be able to identify some people that she knows who are back here.
Exactly. Do you know what I mean? And I don't, you know, if we do that, I mean, so many people's lives could be saved.
Mm.
Obviously, she was 16. She was stupid. She was an idiot, right? But she was very young, naive, and she thought the world was her oyster.
Yeah.
But why not? Why not use that against her? Why not get the intelligence and protect ourselves?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good thought, Shaz. I would not want to do it purely and simply because it would cost us too much money, but it's an interesting one. We'll put that out to the general public to see what it is that they think of that. Shaz says we should bring her back here, put her in a secure unit, perhaps not even without having a trial, and then just get information from her about ISIS. The Home Office have issued this statement, by the way, which is this: we are pleased that the court has found in favour of the government's position in this case. The government's priority remains maintaining the safety and security of the UK, and we will robustly defend any decision made in doing so. And I think that pretty much says it all.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
So if you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1, Monday to Friday on Talk Radio, via DAB, online or via the Talk Radio app. If you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.